Hi, I'm Ted Zoller, and you're tuned into On the Heels of Innovation, a podcast powered by the Entrepreneurs Genome Project at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. How is it that some people are successful in pushing their ideas further and faster than the rest of the world? What characteristics do they share? Which skills did they work to hone? And what lessons have they uncovered through each step forward and back that can inspire you to accelerate your own ideas for a business or venture? This podcast will explore the perspectives, insights, and journeys of innovators and entrepreneurs who combine creative thinking and perseverance to go beyond the expected. On the Heels of Innovation is powered by the Entrepreneurs Genome Project, which is a research initiative that I lead with my students in the Entrepreneurs Lab class at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, revealing the DNA that makes up successful entrepreneurs.
So we're here today with Christian Carlson, one of our grads from Keenan Flagler, MBA grad. Welcome back to Carolina, Christian.
Thank you for having me.
Really excited to have a little time with you to unpack your story on the heels of innovation. And one of the things that really struck me in your history, Christian, as a senior leader at an organization I truly admire, Esri, is that you are an entrepreneur within that organization. Many people are told, you know, young people are told the only way you can become an entrepreneur is to start your own company. But you've been an entrepreneur within the company. And I was wondering if you could help me understand how that opportunity came about. You built a big part of that business as an autonomous kind of operator.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit about that story, how you identified Esri, and then what was it about Esri that gave you that opportunity?
Yeah, so... You know, I get a little bit anxious about going back too far, but I think it's relevant. And I'll tell you that I knew I always had the like personal objective to be involved deeply in business and in the private sector. And I had these images of what my career would look like and what I would do and sort of leading an organization or teams of people and being successful. But I also had what I see when I look back on it as a real conflict. I never identified with this idea of my goal in life is to work for one of these three companies, or I really want to be a hedge fund manager, or I never could get that drilled into exactly what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to contribute, that I wanted to lead people, that I wanted to accomplish great things. And then,
so if they handed you a job description on day one, it wouldn't have worked for you.
I was conflicted because I wanted, that's the career that I felt like I knew that that's where I wanted to go, but I also had these what at the time felt like very conflicting. You always hear people say, what, you know, pursue your passion. Well, my passion was science, my passion was adventure. I loved the concept of exploration. I was that kid who was watching Sunday night National Geographic every Sunday night. I was fascinated by extremes. So what's the coldest place, the windiest wind, the strongest storm? Those were things that were that's really what captivated me, right? And so when I was in undergraduate at the University of Colorado, it was a requirement to graduate that you had to take a geography course. And I did, and it became what I would describe as the aggregate of all sciences. It wasn't biology, it wasn't, you know, chemistry, it wasn't political science, it wasn't public health, but the work that we got introduced to was really that, you know, it aggregated all of those sciences into a common framework, which was geography and the relationship of things on the spatial plane.
Yeah, if you think about it, like, space, where you are, is relevant, you know?
Right.
And what's going on around you, and what could happen, what might happen, what happens elsewhere, it must be something that really piqued your interest early on.
It 100% did, and so I bit, and I went whole hog, and I got 2 degrees as an undergraduate, one in geography and one in economics. And there was a discipline within geography called geographic information systems, which was the computer, using a computer to model and map geographic phenomenon, perform analyses against it. And I became hooked in that as well.
Well, UC Boulder, you know, I know that area is well known for geographic information systems because of the National Center for Atmospheric Research, NCAR,
yep.
The university version, UCAR.
Yep.
I think the standards industry is based there. But was there anything about beyond that one course at UC Boulder that gave you a gateway into what could be done with GIS?
Yes, but I would also argue that I might have been a little bit too young and naive to really connect those dots. And so when I finished school, I ended my first role, I was a developer, a coder for an organization using a geographic information system. And,
gotcha.
And I taught myself how to do that coding on the job. So it was a language that we use called ARC macro language. And I learned on the job how to develop applications using that development language. I had a knack for it. It made sense to me. But I also knew that I wasn't a developer and a coder. That wasn't where my strengths lied. That wasn't what I wanted to do. I still wanted to work in an organization in a different capacity.
What brought that about? Does that go back into your family history? I'm just curious. We talked a little bit about you growing up.
Yeah.
And who was your model for what you wanted to be when you were an undergraduate?
Well, I knew that... I was always very impressed and intrigued with the work history of my father and my grandfather. My father worked for Corning Glassworks and eventually...
Famous company.
Yep. He started at the technical capacity as an engineer, and he ultimately progressed on into marketing and sales and business. And so he took that technical background and went into the business development sort of realm, and I felt like that was something that intrigued me, like the ability to be able to do that. Like, I'm not necessarily a stereotypical business person. Like, I have like this technical aptitude and I have this interest in things, and how could I apply that to an organization? How can I apply that to a career and thrive and do some of the things that I wanted to do personally? And so that was a big driver. That was a part of it. The other part of it was that I just knew at the end of each day of writing code that I was better suited to engage with people, lead teams, work on projects in a different type of capacity. That doesn't mean that was just for me. I was just wired in a different way. And so I ultimately went to work for Esri, which was they made the software that I was using.
Right.
So ARC macro language was the language for a product that they had called ARC Info, and I went to work for that organization.
Sounds like the perfect merger of two things coming together. It sounds like your father brought you into kind of the building innovation space, but then he also showed you that business was your future. And then when you came into your own work, you leveraged innovation, but saw the same pathway into business.
Yeah, I did. And what I didn't really realize at the time, but quickly became apparent to me, was that, I also had this entrepreneurial streak and this notion that, it's just a feeling that you have that you can't really control. Like, I knew that I wanted to do certain things professionally, but I also knew that I wanted to have control. I don't know what words to use. Control. I wanted to sort of like drive my own future. Like, I had all the same things that you would hear from somebody who was going to start their own organization. And what I didn't know at the time, because I thought that there might be, well, I'll go get some experience and then I'll take that next step when I'm ready. But what I didn't know at the time was that Esri in particular was organized around this real entrepreneurial spirit.
Right.
Yeah.
And did that come from the spirit of the founder of the company?
It did.
And yep. Tell us a little bit more about the culture that gave you the opportunity to be an entrepreneur within the company.
Yeah. So just to be real concise about it, the basis of our organization is to create technology that is used to make a difference in the world's great challenges. And those are a lot of consistency over time, but there's a lot of, but adapts. Today we deal with climate change. It really wasn't something we were dealing with when I started 23 years ago.
I see smart cities, infrastructure.
Yeah, there's new stuff, and then there's stuff that has persisted over time. So it's, how can we create and use and apply technology in a way that has a real meaningful impact on the world? Another premise was that we do that through this notion of complete ownership. Our staff owns, you're either developing software or you're serving in another capacity within the organization, but regardless of what that capacity is, there's total individual ownership over your role and what you do. And specifically on the business development side, which is where I was, there was a big emphasis on not, you know, at the time we did not have a tremendous amount of business process or systems that were sort of built around how we built do business. The message that you got sort of within the culture of the company was, we're gonna put you in a role and your objective is to succeed at supporting our customers, implementing the technology in meaningful ways, and how you get the market to do those things is up to you.
Wow.
Right? And so that was incredibly intriguing. Like, you know, a lot of stuff happens that you don't recognize what's happening at the time, and then you look back and you sort of see how it came together, and you know, without you really understanding it at the moment. When I look back, I realize that having that responsibility coupled with autonomy, right, coupled with some intangibles, again, that were very unique to me, like the people that we sold that technology to were not only scientists, which was a passion of mine, but they were also very diverse in what they did. So I would work with the Kennedy Space Center. I would work with Disney Animal Kingdom. I would work with Winn-Dixie Grocery Store. I would work with a military organization at that time. And just having that broad exposure, which in order for us to really develop our business, we had to understand what those people were doing, what their business challenges were. So it gave me the ability, like I could basically, it became the geography model again. Like what I was doing became the aggregator of all my interests.
Does it make sense?
So it's like,
it does.
So it was incredibly fascinating to me. So like I had to figure out how to understand what a grocery store chain was
trying,
what problem they were trying to solve. Then I had to apply my trade craft to their challenge. And then I had to figure out how to do it in a way that allowed us to, you know, generate the revenue stream that allowed us to keep doing that over time. So it was really the aggregate of everything you'd ever sort of want.
And going back to your entry level job for a moment, you knew from the very beginning that you weren't destined to build software. You were a builder,
right,
but you were really an applications person focused on getting the customer's needs met.
Yep.
And that was terribly empowering.
Yep.
And I got to admit, you don't find that very often in many corporations. A lot of corporations are policied such that, you know, you've got to fall within a line of command.
Yep.
It sounds like Esri gave you the capability to really thrive as an entrepreneur within the organization.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I was 26 years old, and I was traveling with the founder and owner of the company. It's a privately held company. His name's Jack Dangerman. He's the...
What a great name.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
For an entrepreneur particularly.
Yeah, and he's an extraordinary individual, and he's like the father of that, of the GIS sort of industry. And we were having dinner. I was young, early in my career. I'm very open about the mistakes I made. I failed forward in a lot of ways.
Everybody.
But I didn't set up an evening dinner with a customer, right? Which at the time, when I realized that I should have, it was an error. But then I look back on it, it was a transformative point in my career because just he and I had dinner. And so I remember distinctly, just like it was yesterday, having dinner with Jack and him explaining to me, at the time, I had a very specific responsibility. I developed business in the state of Florida. And he said, you know, you need to think of the Florida business as your experiment.
Wow.
And your office is your laboratory.
Wow.
And so I want you to experiment at will on how to cultivate and support those customers and develop our business in Florida. And you're free to do what you need to do in order to make that happen. And there was like a brief pause, and this is a critical part, because he came back and said, when an experiment fails, just don't do it again. Right? And I remember that, right? It's like, it seems like a simple sort of message, but what else do you need to know, right? Try something, evaluate your success. If it was a positive, move forward, try
it
again. If it's a negative,
don't do it.
Be aware of it and back off. And like, it started sort of that, you know, when I've thought about this and I've had, you know, now I'm in a situation where I lead a very large sector, one of the largest sectors at the company. So I have about over 200 people on my team. And we, you know, I've been through the process of hiring and staffing our group. And, you know, one of the things I've identified over the years is that the most successful staff that I have over time, there's a couple of consistent traits. And one of them is that the ones who aren't afraid to make a mistake and consider that part of just the cost of doing business or whatever you want to call it, the ticket to play, they're the ones who are most successful. And there was something that happened in that first interaction with Jack that told me, just don't worry about making a mistake. Like, play with speed.
Right.
And if you can play with speed and play with, I don't want to say reckless abandon, but play without fear, then great things can happen.
Well, that's, you know, if you think about it, the baseline for entrepreneurship is the assumption of risk. And what he did is gave you a license to take risk.
Right.
And you put yourself, you know, you were susceptible, maybe vulnerable to it. But that's the only way you learn. It occurs to me now that you're in charge of the major division of Essery that you've got a lot of employees, and a subset of them probably are the ones who drive the business, and a subset of them are the ones who innovate. Mm-hmm. Do you see some people that just aren't comfortable with taking that kind of risk?
Yeah, I mean clearly, like, there's like the whole spectrum of personality type and how they've been conditioned in their, you know, if they're coming to us, if we end up, you know, getting a mid-career person, their past is definitely comes along with them, and sometimes we have to do a little, you know, I try to do a little rewiring. That's a terrible word to use, but I try to rewire. And there's different ways to look at it. Like, I gave you a very specific sort of approach that happened to me early in my career, but then another way that something that I realized, and I'm sort of driving your question forward, is I've also realized that that one of the things that motivated me and what I've experienced in others, and it sort of drives this entrepreneurial mindset in a way, is that what are people really, I shouldn't say people because this is not consistent across, but I can say that for me, one of the things that I'm attracted to are moments and feelings. And so, like, when you're early in your career and you're building, I just remember like building my career, and I was like trying to like be successful, that what I really was attracted to was the feeling I got when work that I did made something positive happen. Like, it felt a certain way. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when you get somebody who is a little bit cautious about taking risk, the other way to accomplish the same exact sort of objective or to create the same outcome is to say, I want you to experience the feeling of making something positive happen. And then once you get that feeling, if you pursue that feeling over and over and over again, I mean, like, what can you ask for that's better than that?
So no question.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're pursuing the feeling of being successful at whatever your objective sort of is. And I guess that the underlying aspect of this whole thing is there's this notion of being, do I have a career or do I have a job?
Right.
And I think it's really important to see yourself as having a career. And if you have a career, then you're sort of looking at your entire body of work in a way that's completely different than you can see yourself if you have just a job.
It makes you responsible.
It makes you responsible.
It makes you be accountable.
You define things that you're responsible for. You do the work to meet that responsibility, and then if you do it right, you get the feeling of success.
Yeah.
And then that's what propels you from one stage to the next, from one year to the next, is pursuing that feeling of success.
Let me connect some dots there, because going way back to your original story where you were obsessed by geography, you know, a place and a moment. You just had a moment and a feeling. You know, serendipity is capturing opportunity when it presents itself. And serendipity is a tool of entrepreneurs. Gifford Pinchot has written this idea of intrapreneurs, people within organizations. But I got to admit, the people that really make a difference inside a large organization are the people that seize opportunity when they come about. Now, isn't that what you're saying? The
is.
Moment, the feeling is about seizing opportunity.
And it happens at all levels. I think a lot of times when we hear the stories, like epitaphic sort of, like, you know, this is about that the image that it conjures up, I know for me, so, for a long time, was when's the lightning bolt moment, where, like, you're really talking about the aha moment, when in reality they can be little ones that happen at a much greater frequency.
Circumstance. It could be harnessing serendipity. It might be just an adaptation.
Right.
You might actually find that the path that you were originally on is not the right path.
Right.
And you change course.
Exactly.
Let's apply that to the people probably listening to this. Imagine yourself sitting, listening to this podcast when you were back at UC Boulder. And you're seeing a world where there are a lot of individuals starting companies, but you know, you've had a huge amount of impact in your career, and you've had as much an entrepreneurial career within Esri. Tell us what kind of advice you would give yourself if you were to do it all over again. Is finding corporate role a path to be an entrepreneur? And if so, how would you go find the one that's best for you?
Yeah, that's a big question. So I'm going to break this down into little chunks. So what's the advice that I would give myself? The first advice would be to really not at a company level, not at a domain level, like I want to be a lawyer or I want to be a corporate lawyer for Microsoft, not at that level, but at a different level, define what it is you're actually interested in.
Right.
Like,
what's the problem?
It doesn't have to be a technology. It doesn't have, it needs to come at a macro level. And I, going back to the beginning of our discussion, I knew that I wanted to be in technology, and I wanted to be part of I wanted my career to take me and expose me to a broad cross section of industries and customers, and I wanted it to be broad. I didn't want it to be really specific. So that was number one. The second bit of advice would be, like, once you've identified what that is for you, is to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
To get going.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I know it's cliche, but you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
Even a bad decision is a good, even a bad experience is a good, you know, it can be a good thing if you think about it the right way. So I would say jump in. And then the third bit of advice would be just not be afraid.
Never.
Like not be afraid. And what I mean by that, I mean it in the broadest context, is not to ever feel like you don't have control of your future and where you are.
Even beyond that, isn't it? It's right. Almost like being comfortable with the fact that you probably can't control what's there and to go with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a million offshoots of that. I mean, you can say, you know, what else does that mean? That means, don't ever feel like you're locked into a decision that you made. Don't ever feel, you mean, like there's just a zillion of these, but it's this notion of, I'm not afraid. Like, I can function freely. Again, play with speed.
And velocity.
And as long as you're wise enough to understand where you make mistakes and how to adjust to them, you're going to come out okay.
Well, Christian, this has been just a real eye-opening experience, and thank you so much for sharing your own career and your own experiences as an entrepreneur within Esri. And we're really proud to have you as part of the Tar Heel Nation. So thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.